Welcome to Forget the Box, the ultimate web series podcast. I'm your host slash Stareable community director, Brie Castellini, and today's episode is a little bit different. Many of you probably already know this, but a few weeks ago, Stareable threw its first indie TV festival called Stareable Fest with tons of amazing panels featuring industry speakers from Vice, Comedy Central, PBS, Warner Bros., and more, moderated by local filmmakers. Today, you'll get to hear one of those incredible panels all about building an audience around your content, moderated by Chelsea Satkamp and featuring speakers Alex LeMay, Eugene Sun Park, and Jay Sibley Law. Make sure you listen to the end of the episode because we're going to announce the winners of our podcast review contest. But that's enough of me for now. Take it away, Stareable Fest.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the panel on building an audience around your content. My name is Chelsea. I have worked in marketing and PR for a variety of places, including WNET, PBS Digital Studios, and Apple Juice Productions, and I'm very excited to learn more from our esteemed panel here today. I'm going to let you guys go ahead and introduce yourselves. Just want to go down the line and say what you do.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for coming. Can you hear me? Okay. My name is Eugene Park. I am a film producer. First and foremost, I've produced 3 feature films, and I'm a little bit newer to web series. My company's produced 2 web series, one called Brujos and one called The Tea, both of which crowdfunded on Seed and Spark, actually. And I'm also the executive director of a 501c3 based in Chicago. We're called Full Spectrum Features, and we're kind of unique in that we're a nonprofit that's set up to as a production company to actually produce scripted narrative content. And the way we're able to do that through a nonprofit model is we have a very specific mission of supporting diversity. Most of the work we produce is written and directed by women, LGBTQ filmmakers, and people of color.
My name is Alex LeMay. I am an independent showrunner. I work primarily with YouTube Red, Maker. I do a lot of stuff for Sony. And I also do a bunch of TV development, so I sit and come up with ideas for networks. And so that is where I'm at, and part of what I do is I also consult and coach working kind of mid-career filmmakers in audience building and building and monetizing their content.
Hi there, my name is Sib Law. I've been a producer of more than 20 web series over the past more years than I care to count, and been involved in 10 others. Helped launch Mom Cave TV, which is actively being produced and has been for the past 4 years. Every episode is sponsored. I'm a past chairman of the International Academy of Web Television geared toward web series, and on March 2nd, we will launch our first Tango Dango Awards.
Thank you. So as Alex so expertly put it in his panel yesterday, he said audience is the new currency. And if you're building something and no one watches it, does it really exist? And also, it hinders your ability to create something in the future, because that is what people care about. That's what gets funded. We all want our projects to be seen by as many people as possible. And when we're working so hard on something, we can flatter ourselves into thinking everybody would love this. Men, women, children, young, old, all nationalities, everyone. Here's a softball question for you. Is this actually possible for everyone to love what you do?
That's the goal, or the dream, of course. Given my organization's mission, most of our content you might describe, or some people describe, as niche content. So we specifically target a lot of our content towards the LGBTQ market or the South Asian market or whatever specific stories and identities are being represented. But we never are content with only reaching that market. So we're always trying to figure out ways to expand that, because the reality is a lot of these stories, even if you don't necessarily see yourself or identify with the characters on the screen, so many of the stories are universal and they should carry to a wider audience. So that's the challenge. And a lot of times the marketplace, I would say, doesn't recognize that there is a broader appeal. So one of the frustrations, I don't know if this is true in the web series world too, but with feature films, if you have a feature film, like our first film starred women of color, and it was a lesbian rom-com, as soon as we went out into the marketplace, everyone basically told us that movie only fits here. No one else, no one on this panel wants to watch that movie, is basically what they were telling us. And what we found is, as we built our audience and went out and showed it at festivals, that actually wasn't true. So I think some of the thinking has to change in terms of what type of content is appropriate or is going to appeal to what types of people.
I mean, I agree with everything there, you know, and starting out niche is a really great way to find that core audience, and the way it breaks out of that is by them being your megaphone, right? So you bring them into your world and then induce them to share and talk about it. But that's obviously harder said than done. And so really, my, you know, where I scream from the mountaintops is you have to give them context before you just say something like, hey, check out my new trailer. They have no context for you, for as a filmmaker. They have no context for you, for your work. They don't know what it stands for. They don't know what you believe in. And when you get vulnerable and truthful like that online and start talking about who you really are and what you stand for and what your content means, then all of a sudden you start finding that niche audience and you start finding that core audience that then is going to turn outward and break it out. But I agree, you know, I hear so many times the market or the buyers say that fits here. And they have to say that because they have this really skinny mandate, right? They have this really skinny buying mandate, which if they stop the bike wheel from turning the way it's supposed to be turning and all of a sudden invest in you, they have to explain why that's happening. So in many ways, they're really about keeping the mechanism that's already built and working for them working. And so getting them to change their mind is your job as a producer. You have to go in there and be an agent of change and get them to be from, you know, this is us versus you, to them having conversations with you about we. And I think that's the best way from a buying standpoint to get buy-in and get the support that work needs, because they can buy it and not advertise it very well or put it in the wrong place or things like that. So you have to have a lot of sensibility about where that is.
Building on that, I would say, I think when you're launching a show or a web series, you want to find who are your champions outside of, you know, your mom and your brother and sister and, you know, those sorts of things. Who are the folks who are going to really champion your cause, your show, your piece? I love the slide that Christina from the previous session had up where she said, you know, all these women are aged 24 to 35, I think was the demographic. And one woman was in full combat fatigues. Another woman was stylishly dressed. Another one was more urban in nature. Very different in terms of who they are in terms of their audience appeal. I did a little work with Mom Cave TV when we launched the show 4 years ago, and at that time we looked at, okay, who's our demographic? Okay, so it's moms, but then who else is it? So we started breaking it down. How do advertisers think about it? Well, they look at moms with kids ages 0 to 3, and moms with kids ages 3 to 6. So it's not the age of the mom, it's the age of the child. But we broke that down even a little further. Urban moms who are snarky and happen to like to drink. So you start, you know, getting that niche. Those women, those be the people who will champion the show. Does it mean other people won't like the show? No, not at all. In fact, we built in a broad appeal to it so that regardless of whether, you know, you're a man, there are some things you could find funny and fun and appealing. And if you fall outside of that niche of moms in a certain with kids in a certain age demographic, you could still really enjoy the show. But we just found that this particular niche would be our champion.
We'll get into tactics in a minute, but when, in your opinion, is the best time to start audience building? When in the production process?
It's easily months before you even have a fully baked idea. People need to understand, and you get feedback from them. If the idea is, I'm going to go heads down and make my web series for 9 months a year, and I'm not going to say anything about it. And then I go out with the, hey, check out my work, and I post like crazy for 2 weeks, which is the same post over and over again, which is check out my stuff, and then expect 2 million people to show up. That's not audience building. Audience building is as much as independence. I'm not talking about being up in, you know, giant siloed media organizations. That's a different egg. They've got advertising budgets. They've got marketing plans. They've got media buyers. They've got all of that stuff. I'm talking about as an independent person who wants to get their work seen by thousands and thousands and thousands of people. That's not a plan. The plan is that they need to understand who you are as a person too. They need to understand what kind of filmmaker. They pay you with their time. Why would they invest their time in you if they don't have any context for who you are and what you believe in and what you stand for and what your work means? Talking about the subject matter of your work is as important as talking about the plot. Because plot isn't always just, you're going to get a wider audience if you get somebody, for example, LGBTQ, right? If you're talking about that subject matter in a broader sense, you're going to bring in a wider segment of people rather than just film fans, right? And then you can start introducing them to the content. They'll also give you feedback if you start talking about your idea. You can listen. Building something and then saying, I'm going to find an audience later is tough. Building something for an audience that already exists and building things for that makes a lot more sense.
Building on that exactly, I think, not only building something for that audience, but getting involved in those groups and those organizations and being part of the community, not just serving the community.
Yeah, in terms of the timing, with all of our projects, we start audience building well before the actual content is created. Maybe I could talk about an example to help sort of illustrate what I'm saying. So we're currently producing a feature film that's going to shoot in December called The Year Between, and it's a female-driven comedy about mental illness. The main character has bipolar disorder, so it's very topically specific, but it's humorous. The film hasn't been shot yet, and instead of shooting the film and then trying to go find the audience, what the filmmaker has done is, starting in February, she started an Instagram account, and she understands her brand. She understands that she's doing mental illness comedy. It's a very specific thing, and what she's found is a huge need for it. There's a lot of, she just graduated college recently, there's a lot of young people who want to talk about their struggles with bipolar disorder, depression, anxiety. So she's posting these videos and memes, and I think she's got like 8,000 followers now. And this is, she's like nobody. She just graduated from Northwestern a year and a half ago. And because she got this audience and her brand is now out there, people know who she is as an artist. We got the interest of the Tribeca Film Institute. They are supporting the project, and they're basically connecting us up to the funding for the film. And that came just because she had this idea that instead of sitting around waiting for my movie to happen, I'm going to start connecting with my audience today, even when she had no content. There's no movie yet.
I think that's such an amazing example, right? Like, now, all of a sudden, the conversation of mental illness is out there in a new way, and from an unexpected source. And like, that's an example of somebody who can get multiple revenue streams from that one subject matter. She could write a book, right? She could do a reality show. She could do, or an unscripted show is what we really call it, right? And there's 1,000 different ways to talk about that, and building an ecosystem of content around a single idea and having a conversation that touches people in different ways. It doesn't have to be at that scale. It can even be where there is some shoulder content that's in the form of a vlog. There's written content on Facebook. There's guest posts on blogs. And it's all coming at this one subject matter from 1,000 different ways. So make 1,000 little things for your one big thing before you ever build the one big thing.
I think that's brilliant. Okay, so we talked about the who and the when. Let's go into the where and the how. A lot of independent creators are also having to do the marketing themselves. We're stretched on time and resources. And when you're putting together your outreach plan, it can seem overwhelming. There's seemingly endless ways to reach people. There's endless platforms, channels. Where do you begin? How do you prioritize?
So coming from more of a feature film background, we always launch all of our content with essentially a big-ass premiere and party. We're based in Chicago, so usually what we'll do is find a venue that's appropriate for the theatrical exhibition part of it. The film that I'm actually wearing a hat for, Signature Move, we premiered that at the Music Box Theater in Chicago, and then rented out this big warehouse venue. The movie involves Lucha Libre wrestling, so we rented out a professional wrestling ring. We flew in professional wrestlers from out of town, had musicians. It was a spectacle, and we had around 1,400 people turn out for it. And the idea was, we're not just going to upload it and hope people come. We're going to create this big media event, get the influencers in Chicago on the red carpet, and make it a thing so that all those people are going out and talking about it. But we also need to make sure that there's follow-up. That's one of the things I always talk to my staff about, is we can have some big party and everyone's has fun, and then we have a hangover the next day. And then if we don't have a plan for how to build on that, it's that momentum is just going to fizzle out. All we're going to have is some pictures on social media. So we need to have the next 5-10 steps lined up after the premiere. What's going to happen with that? What press pieces are coming out after that? Even pre-writing like posts for your influencers. We have our graphic designers pre-create social media friendly images, and we just hand them all over to them, and it's all kind of scheduled out and ready to go. I mean, I don't know if that's typical for web series, but we always start with the live event.
Adding to that, I think when you're with a web series, you're looking at something that's going to be a build over time. So part of it is understanding where that audience is located. So on your social media, what social media are they actually using? We found with moms, for instance, they weren't necessarily yet on Snap at the time that we launched the show, where they might be more so now. We found a tremendous number of them were on Facebook, spent a lot of time on Facebook. So we converted a lot of the IP around the show to reach them on Facebook and engage them. And there were a lot of direct conversations that were engaged in on Facebook. So the other thing, we made a strategic decision, I would say about 9 months into the launch of the brand, and that was to be very personality driven. And so that we had a few key moms who were the primary content creators around the brand. And we made them front and center, and have them have live and real dialogues in an ongoing way, both in the text portion on Facebook and on YouTube, but then also in on the video content as well.
Yeah, I think that building on that as well is, if you are an independent creator who's creating out of your apartment, which is a lot of people, right? There may not be that opportunity. But what this, both of them are saying, is that there's this kickoff, right? There's this shake the tree. It's disrupt something, make some noise. Maybe it's a controversial post that takes another look from a different point of your subject matter, right? That gets people talking and driving them towards where you want them to go. You want to look for those fishing holes, right? People who are interested in a certain subject matter probably would be interested in a film about that subject matter. So where are they hanging out? And one great way to do it, just a simple tactic, like it doesn't cost anything, is type the subject matter, not like blogs about, it's type maybe the problem that your content solves, which would be something, about, millennial women having trouble in the workplace. Millennial women having trouble in the workplace, right? Type that in. You're going to see that problem and people chatting about it. Look at the comments in that blog or in that publication. That meant somebody had enough pain in their life to type something in a space on a website that said, I'm struggling with this. I hate this. I don't like that. Engage in those conversations, right? Because they're telling you what they're looking for. They're actually searching for a result when they do that. And your content is part of their solution. Does that make sense? So you making a film about mental health in college, that's such a specific niche, but such a huge problem, right? So that person now has another resource that speaks inspirationally when we make movies. We crack open and uncover every rock or web series allowed to explore that subject matter over years, 4 years, right? So now all of a sudden you have a means of addressing people who are searching for it, and then you start seeing how many people are gathering around that subject matter. That's your audience. And the core people who are willing to engage with you are really your audience. They're those super fans.
You guys mentioned the big kickoff. Throughout the course of the series, what have you found to be successful to keep up momentum, keep up excitement?
So with the live events that we do, when you promote a premiere, you're basically on social media for an entire month before it. And what ends up happening is, let's say we have a venue that holds 1,400 people. There might be 30,000 people who become aware of the event through the Chicago Tribune. They hear about it on WBZ, which is our NPR station, maybe more, 50,000. But only a small sliver of those people come. But those 1,400 people become very active ambassadors. So we make sure that we have our Eventbrite list. We do an email blast with all those people with the link to the web series and say, share it with your friends. Help us go viral, because we don't tell the 1,400 people that we're sort of inviting them to indoctrinate them and make them ambassadors for the film. But that's the hope, is that they're part of that select group of a much larger pool of people who were aware of this event, who got to experience this very special thing, party with the creators, the stars, do the whole red carpet thing. And now they're going to go and try to at least brag to their friends about the experience, whether it's just showing pictures of themselves at the event. And hopefully for us, that translates into some of their friends watching it. And they might be like, oh yeah, I wanted to go to that thing, but when I tried to get tickets, it was sold out. And then I heard the filmmakers on the radio 2 days later. So we always make sure that, yeah, that the press is lined up. And that, as silly as it sounds, like making sure that all your links are ready to go, because a lot of times, with some of our earlier projects, we've gotten a lot of momentum, or we're so focused on the premiere, we forget about that follow up, and we're like, oh shoot, there's all this buzz, but like this link is broken, and we uploaded two videos here, and it didn't compress properly, and now we have to take that down and put it up. So test everything 100 times before you go big with it.
I can speak for us with Mom Cave, in particular, just ongoing engagement. So I don't know if you were here for the previous session from Seed and Spark, where they talked about constantly engaging, and Christina, I believe was her name, when she had done her own Seed and Spark campaign, she engaged her audience in an ongoing way throughout. So she had blog posts, she was regularly talking about her process and what she learned and helped bring our audience into her process as a filmmaker. So I think if you're appealing to that creative need for folks, then she was doing that in that world. I think for us, you know, with Mom Cave, we've got moms who swear and drink, but they want to be good moms, and sometimes they feel very isolated, and sometimes they have a partner that may travel a lot, and so it's hard. And so they bear it all. So there's a lot of being really genuine and a lot of ongoing real engagement, sometimes one-on-one with audience members directly in the social media.
That was what I was going to say, was there's this power and vulnerability, bleeding a little bit online, right? And exposing yourself in a way that is honest. Honesty builds trustworthiness. That builds trust in the audience. If you are vulnerable and you kind of reveal yourself in a healthy, meaningful way, right? And you do it in that vulnerability will build the trust of that audience, and that person is way more likely to be your champion, to be your evangelist, to be that person who's going to speak about it, to say, you know, this person said something that literally hit the nail on the head, and now all of a sudden, that person shared with one person, shared with another person, and that's where you get that bit of virality, right? And it doesn't take you building an initial audience of 500,000 people to get the movement towards your stuff, because it's a process. Overnight is not real if you're doing it from, as an independent creator, from your home. It's not real. It's a process of constant and never-ending engagement. And I think then you start defining yourself, and they know how to buy you, right? They know what they're getting. They know what the people love their boxes, right? And they know where you fit. But if you are trying to be everything to everybody, you'll be liked by everybody, but you'll be loved by none of them, right?
And I think we touched on this a little bit, but are there any top mistakes or pitfalls you've seen creators make when trying to market? Do they go too hard on social media? I don't know, what other kind of things?
Yes.
Right, I think, yeah.
Can you expand on that?
I can speak for myself. Early days with web series, the buckshot approach of being kind of generic and putting it out there, and I would say being somewhat less than authentic. You know, people have pretty good bullshit meters, and if you're spewing bullshit, they'll go bullshit, and they couldn't care less about what you have to say afterwards. And I really think anything less than being completely authentic will kill your show.
I think the most common mistake I see, this is with feature filmmakers too, is there's this assumption that the work is so great the audience is going to flock to it, and you don't need to earn that audience or work to get that audience. That I hear a lot of people say, the hard part is done, we shot the film. And it's like, no, now you have a piece of content, now the hard work begins. And I think it's just a fundamental misunderstanding of the timeline and also the amount of work that goes into it. One of the things is kind of connecting to the previous question that I think a lot of web series creators should think about is looking at what independent filmmakers do in terms of the festival circuit. I've seen more and more web series screening at traditional film festivals. I was just at the Frameline Film Festival in San Francisco, and I don't want to say a third, but a good chunk of their content was actually web series, and I got to talk to some of the producers and creators, and one thing they're doing is really interesting is they're not releasing, it's called a web series, but it's not on the web. They're playing the film festival circuit first the way you would with a film. So maybe play 40 or 50 film festivals. Now you have people all across the country buzzing about this thing, there's articles written about it, and everyone's like, where can I see it? And you build up to this date and do a big online release, and now you've actually primed the pump instead of just releasing it and expecting people to show up.
Yeah, I agree totally with both statements. I think when you believe your own hype and you believe that, you know, the pearls of creativity are falling from your very lips, it happens. It's just what we do. Like, we fall in love with our projects and we think everybody else will. Again, context and authenticity, the two things that are really important to build an audience, right? They have to understand why. They have to understand why it's important, why it matters, right? And if we can't give them that context, it's tough to have them go on that journey with you. I love this idea of doing a bunch of film festivals before you ever released it, because there is such a mentality of, I just want to get by and shoot. I just want to make $3,000 a month and shoot every day, because that's the sexy part. Who doesn't, right? The most horrible thing to do is put a post out and nobody sees it, nobody says anything. The worst thing that can happen is have to do that again and keep going back to that trough and then tweaking your message and finding out what finally resonates and doing what works and leaving the rest, right? So that engagement is your job as a creator. That engagement is 90% of your job. Now, content is cheap to make. As much as you think it's expensive, I shot on film in my early career, so let's get going, all right? That was just to color that, just to do the sound mix. Tens and tens and tens of thousands of dollars. It's why Kevin Smith sold Clerks. It was finished, right? And it, for a couple other reasons too, it hit something, it hit a little zeitgeist, but at the end of the day, those days are gone, right? So audience is the new currency. It used to be content was the currency. Now, anybody with a great DSLR and a $400 Rokinon lens can make beautiful, beautiful stuff, and the internet is filled with gorgeous shit, right, that nobody sees.
Can I just add one thing on the festivals? What I found with taking a web series out to festivals is you may think you know who your audience is, but there's nothing like taking content out to the festival circuit as a wake-up call. So you might think, this was not a web series, but it was an early short film that I did as a director, and I thought it was like a Sundance art house kind of thing. And somehow Christian film festivals really took to it. I'm not a practicing Christian. I had no intention for this content
That's awesome.
To be for the Christian marketplace. And I'm like, wow, that's actually the audience for this content. And I think a lot of people will make a web series thinking they know what the audience is, but there's nothing like getting those acceptances and rejections to tell you. But also, if you go to the film festival with your web series and see who's sitting in the audience, and they usually do like a Q&A, look who comes up and talks to you afterwards, talk to the other filmmakers, and you start to realize that maybe your audience isn't exactly what you thought it was, or at the very least, even if you find out that it is what you thought it was, that's, you know, affirmation that, like, this is who I need to go after.
I love that it's like, you start out one place and it ends up being 24-year-old Chilean nuns or something, you know? I mean, it's like, all right. But see, that's the perfect thing right there, right? That's the market telling you how you're serving it. So you can deny that and you can stay where you are, or you can say, we're a Christian film. Let's rock. Let's go.
Eugene, you mentioned press. Do you have top advice, all of you, on how to get the most value out of your PR efforts? How do you pitch journalists, that kind of thing?
So we do a mixture of hiring publicists who do this for a living and actually have contacts at the LA Times and stuff like that and can get reviews that we would never be able to get on our own. We pretty much focus on smaller blogs and local press, and I guess I would say get good at writing press releases, make it as short as possible, and then cut it in half after you think you've gotten down to as short as possible. And at least with the local press and smaller blogs, it's like anything, it's relationship building. So these outlets are getting thousands of submissions every day. So don't be surprised if the first 1,000 times you send it out, you don't hear anything. But I would say stay persistent. And then also give them something unique. So one thing, I can't remember who gave me this advice, but they're like, instead of just putting your trailer up and trying to get some buzz around it, bring it to a press outlet that's at about your level for where you are in your career and say, I'm going to let you have the online premiere of the trailer and do an exclusive interview. So make it something special for them instead of posting the trailer and then expecting press to cover it, because they're going to be like, well, it's all over the place. It's nothing special. Why would I write about this instead of something else?
Yeah, an example of that with Mom Cave, there's this plethora of mommy bloggers out there. But as you can imagine, just like our show serves this very narrow niche, there are lots of other mommy bloggers in this very narrow niche. And so strategically we went out and partnered with them, had some of them come on and guest blog, be on some of the live shows, and then vice versa. And I think being part of that broader online community worked really well for Mom Cave.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Is you know, going out, one, knowing who you're reaching out to, knowing their audience and how they serve it. If you go and you're doing some kind of male soap opera and you're pitching a gardening blog, that's going to be a tough haul, right? But also knowing how they're talking to their audience at the moment, like, you have to get engaged in their conversation. They get bombarded, right, with requests to guest post every day. And they've built that audience, and it's like their kid. So they only let a certain amount of people in that they can trust is serving their audience. They also can't keep up with continual posting because now they're super busy. And so guest blogging is a way for them to keep giving fresh content. So if you can frame your film to those bloggers in a way that serves their direct audience, because you know what their audience is, send them a short thing, tell them you understand who their audience is and how they serve them, that you love what they do, and then after that say, and this is how I think this film is going to serve your audience, right?
Advertising. There are a lot of ways to advertise nowadays, social media, pay-to-play, influencers, blogs. What have you guys found to be the most successful, or when you have a limited budget, what's the most bang for your buck?
Just being totally transparent, we haven't had a ton of success with paid advertising, which is maybe a good thing. We get a lot more mileage from influencers and people more organic conversations on social media. We've done targeted Facebook ads, and it generates some VOD traffic for our feature films, but it's never been like so robust that we just keep pouring money into it. So we're still trying to figure that out.
Yeah, I would say for us, we've done some limited Facebook ads. We've done some Snap ads. And I would say our biggest audience opportunity has been through cross-pollination, through people in the community.
That's what I was going to say. I don't know anybody who is advertising a film on Facebook that's getting a ton of results from that. It's the organic relationship that you build with an audience and their ability to go out and turn around and speak about it to somebody else. You know, if you're a coach, you know, solving, you know, personal financing, you're golden on Facebook. But if you're a creative trying to, you know, pitch an independent film to an audience in a way that a movie, like a big movie studio would, it doesn't look like theirs. They're used to a kind of advertising that's massive. So if it doesn't look like that, it's got this weird flavor to it and they get confused. So your authenticity is really your best advertising and the longevity with which you're willing to do that, right? And if you don't want to do this, you can't make independent content today. This is what has to be done.
You guys have given a few case studies, which have been great. Do you guys have any more about kind of some surprising tactics or platforms you've done outreach on that have had a lot of success?
Yeah, we did this multi-platform thing called Berserk in 2011, which was this crazy sci-fi transmedia thing. And we created a video for a fake cult. And we didn't tell anybody it was real, but we didn't tell, it was so campy that you couldn't not know. But people went nuts for this thing. And then it was actually led towards the launch of a book, which then went towards the launch of the movie, right? And so the movie was ended up being at Sony, and we got that picked up because we had a ton of audience engagement around this weird world we had built and kicked it off with this unexpected thing, like, have you seen this weird thing? Is this real? Is this thing? And they went crazy. And it fed into a larger world and ended up going to a website that had this countdown clock on it. And it said, put your email in here because when this is over, the world is going to change. Right? And it went crazy. It sounds totally bullshit. Like, it sounds like, holy shit, you're manipulating a lot of people. Maybe we were, I don't know, but it was super fun. And they all came on. But at some point, everybody went, this is transmedia. Holy cow. So the lines between reality and fiction were blurred. And that's what we played in, was this shady, weird place. And then it ended up, the book came out to success. And then at the Frankfurt Book Fair, Sam Raimi saw the little teaser and ended up saying, okay, great, right? You know, this is awesome. We want to do this as a movie. And because we had this big audience on it, a digital audience, they couldn't just say, we want to buy it outright and you guys go home and do your cute little films. They had to pay attention to us, so we sat at the table differently. We were able to say, well, if you want these 500,000 people, you're going to have to allow us to have some merchandise on it. You're going to have to allow us to have a credit. You're going to have to give us a lot more money for the option. So you see what an audience does. It gives you leverage at the bargaining table when you do get pulled into that Hollywood situation or into that network situation. You're no longer sitting there with a great kid with a great piece of content. You're sitting there with an audience, which is what they desperately want, because that's what business they're in.
And so, you know, and that's on the pull side, where the studio is, you know, buying it out. But on the other side, if you have a fan who's completely engaged in your content, being transmedia allows them to stay engaged and continue to come back day after day after day, because there's so much richness to get. I'll give you kind of a bad example. I follow a podcast called Philosophize This. If you're into philosophy, it's phenomenal, but that's it. There's nothing to go read. There's not, you know, it's just that. And if Stephen West would, you know, put all sorts of papers he's writing and curate some stuff on his website, I would absolutely go and spend a lot of time there. But I can't. I'll still listen to his monthly podcast.
One surprise that we've had with one of our projects is how the evolving, basically, social and political climate has change the marketplace for the content. So we, one of our first projects was a transmedia project that included a short film and like an interactive website. It's kind of telling the story of Japanese internment camps. So it dramatizes a Japanese man going off to camp. So we started, prison sites, that camp kind of downplays the severity of the situation. So we started the project in 2015, so that was pre the current administration, and then we thought it was kind of a important historical topic still. We didn't realize how it was going to be connected to what's happening with children of detainees and Muslim bans and so on. And what we found was that basically the entire marketplace shifted on us as the content was being created. So we had to do several massive pivots with the content in terms of how we were thinking about getting it out there. Because initially it was primarily for educators and historians, but now suddenly people who are interested in the Muslim ban want to talk about this because the history of Japanese incarceration is being cited as a precedent for the executive order that resulted in the travel ban, and we needed to start looking at a much wider range of partners and thinking about different ways of plugging the content into live conversation. Then, unfortunately, it seems like every 6 weeks there's some new thing in the news where we have to do another pivot. And we're like, okay, there's a different way we're going to have to put this project out there. And it also actually forced us to, I guess, in some ways, be much more cautious about how we were talking about the project because it was no longer merely a historical topic. Now everything we said about it became politicized. And we had to be very careful because there were a lot of haters who were coming onto our social media being like, oh, this is some kind of anti-Trump movie. And we had to be very careful about how we responded to that because we make scripted narrative content that's supposed to be entertaining. We don't engage with this sort of like heated political environment. And we had to be very, very cautious about how we responded and how we talk about our project.
How did you respond?
We never want to engage in a fight online. We never want to, I guess one way to put it is we always try to take the high road and say, this is, you know, direct them to some educational resources and say, this is not the forum for having this type of debate about X, Y, or Z. And please go watch our movie. We have a screening coming up at this place, or go look at our website.
Great. Thank you, guys. This is very informative.
You can find the full audience building panel, including the question and answer segment at the end that I cut out of this podcast, as well as all of the live streams from Starablefest 2018 at our Facebook page, facebook.com/Starable. Thanks so much for listening. If you like this episode, remember to subscribe to Forget the Box on iTunes and leave a kind review. We've only got 2 episodes left in season 1 of Forget the Box, and we'll only get a season 2 if you, yes you, help us spread the word about the amazing episodes we've put out so far. As for the podcast review contest, if your name is Alexander Kirby or Amanda Taylor, please email podcast@starable.com because you're our 2 winners. And everyone else, stay tuned. We're definitely planning out more fun contests in the future. Next week, we'll hear from Najee and Tim, co-creators of the Best of Starable Fest web series, The Feels, where we'll talk about their low-budget, high-quality secrets and how to have a productive, creative partnership. Until then, thanks for listening to Forget the Box, and thanks to Anna Eichenauer, @QueerGermanGirl on Twitter, for our theme music.